it is my intention to go out and earn this nomination and to win.
Well, good luck, Madam Vice President. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, as well as other fine terrestrial stations in California, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Ohio, New York, Louisiana, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Arkansas, Washington State, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, not to mention a whole bunch of streaming sites all across this planet. And all of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for yet another busy news day for a change. on Monday, following President Joe Biden's announcement on Sunday that he would not be running for a second term and would be endorsing his vice president for that role, that vice president and presumptive Democratic nominee for president, Kamala Harris, spoke to staffers at what was formerly the Biden-Harris campaign HQ up in Delaware, now the Harris for President campaign HQ in Wilmington, Delaware. After thanking the president for his support and singing his considerable praises and his historic accomplishments, During Joe Biden's first term, the vice president turned to the campaign at now at hand, and specifically to the convicted felon and adjudicated rapist and fraudster that the Republican Party has decided to officially nominate as their standard bearer in 2024. God love them. She gave us an idea of the way that Harris, a former prosecutor in California before becoming senator and vice president, the way she plans to prosecute the case against her opponent, Donald Trump, to the approval of the former Biden-Harris, now Harris campaign staffers, before she took similar remarks on the road for her very first rally as a presidential candidate on Tuesday, where a roaring crowd of battleground state voters greeted the vice president as she officially opened her Democratic political case against Republican former president Donald Trump in Wisconsin. In the November election, she said, it's a choice between, quote, freedom and chaos. Oh, I know. I've got my pick on that one. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
Quote, in this campaign, she said, I promise you I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week. Adding, we believe in a future where every person has the opportunity not just to get by, but to get ahead. As she did on Monday in Delaware for campaign staffers, Kamala Harris once again laid out the case that she clearly intends to prosecute against the former president.
Before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women. Fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type. I promise you, I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week. As Attorney General of California, I took on one of our country's largest for-profit colleges that was scamming students. Donald Trump ran a for-profit college that scammed students. As a prosecutor, I specialized in cases involving sexual abuse. Well, Trump was found liable for committing sexual abuse. As Attorney General of California, I took on the big Wall Street banks and held them accountable for fraud. Donald Trump was just found guilty of fraud on 34 counts. But let's also make no mistake, this campaign is not just about us versus Donald Trump. This campaign is about who we fight for. This is about who we fight for. Just look at how we are running our campaigns. So Donald Trump is relying on support from billionaires and big corporations. And he is trading access in exchange for campaign contributions. A couple months ago at Mar-a-Lago, he literally promised big oil lobbyists, he would do their bidding for $1 billion in campaign donations. On the other hand, we are running a people-powered campaign. And Wisconsin, this campaign is also about two different visions for our nation. One, where we are focused on the future. The other, focused on the past. We believe in a future where every person has the opportunity not just to get by, but to get ahead. Ours is a fight for the future. It is a fight for freedom. Generations of Americans before us led the fight for freedom. And now, Wisconsin, the baton is in our hands.
Well, that was a lively campaign kickoff. A roaring crowd indeed. Harris arrived in Milwaukee, the scene of last week's bizarre Republican National Convention, after having locked up the nomination support, reportedly from a majority of pledged Democratic delegates in just about 24 hours' time after President Biden dropped his reelection bid on Sunday. Though, to be clear, those delegates are now free to vote as they like at the convention, or, as Democrats are still suggesting will happen, during a pre-convention online roll call vote that has been planned in order to ensure the Democratic candidate meets statutory deadlines in the great state of Ohio. In those same 24 hours or so, following Sunday's announcement, the Harris campaign raised an astounding more than $100 million in small donations, an all-time presidential campaign record, as party delegates and elected leaders continue to coalesce around her candidacy, including congressional leaders Charles Schumer, that would be Chuck Schumer, and Hakeem Jeffries, who on Tuesday both joined the chorus of elected officials endorsing Harris in the wake of Joe Biden's endorsement of her on Sunday afternoon. And it wasn't just money and endorsements that have come rolling in since Sunday. Apparently more than 60,000 volunteers have now signed up with the campaign since Sunday. As well, more than 60,000. For his part, President Biden has announced on Tuesday that he will address the nation from the Oval Office on Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on his discussion to drop his 2024 presidential reelection bid. He posted on Twitter that he would speak, quote, on what lies ahead, unquote, and how he will, quote, finish the job for the American people. That's about all we know. By stopping in Wisconsin, Harris was going to one of the blue wall so-called blue wall states. That's Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. The Democrats see as essential for securing a presidential victory. In fact, if Democrats can hold those three states this November, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, even if they lose the other battleground states that they won last time, like Arizona and Georgia, they will be able to hold on to the White House. It's those three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, that this may come down to. Without all of those three so-called blue wall states, they will have to win. If they win only two of them, let's say, and they lose Pennsylvania, they will have to win at least two of the other battleground states this year in order to win the White House. So expect both the Republican and Democratic campaigns at this point to spend a whole lot of time in those three states, with now just over 100 days until Election Day. All right, before we get to my guest, to get a, yes, a MAGA take, Desi Doyen, or at least a former MAGA American take on many of these developments. A few other quick news headlines I want to hit before that, and before Desi's latest Green News report, focusing on the extraordinary environmental legacy of the outgoing president.
And it is extraordinary.
As well as the environmental records of both Kamala Harris and, yes, Donald Trump. That's all a little bit later. But in some other news here, the director of the Secret Service resigned on Tuesday in the aftermath of the assassination attempt on former President Trump that unleashed an outcry about how the agency failed in its core mission to protect current and former presidents. Kimberly Cheadle, who had served as Secret Service Director since August of 2022, faced growing calls to resign and several investigations into how a gunman was able to get so close to the Republican presidential nominee at an outdoor campaign rally in Pennsylvania on July 13, where from about 150 yards away, the 20-year-old gunman was able to fire a whole bunch of shots in quick succession with an AR-15-style rifle, narrowly missing Trump, killing a rally goer and wounding two others. Quote, I take full responsibility for the security lapse, said Cheadle in an email to staff that was obtained by the Associated Press. In light of recent events, she said, it is with a heavy heart that I have made the difficult decision to step down as your director. Cheadle's resignation came a day after she appeared before a congressional committee and was berated for hours by both Democrats and Republicans for the security failures. In other high-ranking officials resigning news today, Democratic Senator Robert Menendez will resign next month after being found guilty on all 16 counts in a federal bribery and corruption trial. That, according to sources at several media outlets on Tuesday. Menendez will leave office on August 20, according to NBC sources. His date of departure was first reported by the New Jersey Globe. The Senate, U.S. Senate, announced that it had received a resignation letter from Menendez at the start of its business day on Tuesday afternoon. Nearly every Democratic senator, as well as House members and other key elected officials in New Jersey, had said that Menendez needed to resign his seat, making it untenable for him to continue. Some had threatened to force a vote to expel the three-term senator. Menendez is also under investigation by the Senate Ethics Committee, which said in a statement on Monday that it had initiated an adjudicatory review, I think I said that right, which is a required step before making a recommendation by the committee to the full Senate to expel or otherwise discipline a senator. Republicans, ironically, have remained almost completely silent about all of this, which is kind of strange, but for the fact that calling for a convicted Democrat to step down as they normally would do might seem a little bit strange after the party just nominated a 34-time convicted felon to be their presidential nominee. Good Lord. And on that front, within hours of President Biden withdrawing from the presidential race and endorsing Kamala Harris to run in his stead, 34-time convicted felon Donald Trump had a response to all of this. It was all very, very unfair, he seems to be saying over and over again. It is his classic MO, writes TPM's Josh Kavinsky, leaning wantonly into personal grievance when nothing else will do. Biden, Trump suggested, was lying about having COVID. Did you know that? That was all a lie. It was all a hoax just to somehow pull off this scam. The Republican Party, he said, should, quote, be reimbursed for fraud because it had been so grossly misled. And Trump added he would no longer agree to the terms of the next debate. He'd rather it be held on friendlier turf. That would be Fox News, effectively signaling that he is dropping out of the next debate as currently scheduled. We will see. It was a cacophony of a reaction from one man, but it's reflective of the broader response on the far right to Harris becoming the likely Democratic nominee. The idea that this is fraud. It's a fraud perpetrated on. We spent millions and millions going after Joe Biden, and now he's not even running. What? There's got to be something fraudulent about this. There's got to be something illegal about this. And of course, nobody knows fraud better than Donald Trump. But this is not fraud. This is politics.
Yes, but he always plays the victim, and so do Republicans. So, you know, that is their favorite safe place.
And no doubt, whatever he said, no matter how little sense his claims make at this point, or no matter how little evidence he has to support any of them, by now, Trump has a built-in cult that is ready to not just buy whatever he's saying, but repeat it over and over and over again until those lies become actual accepted fact, as if they are reality, no matter how absurd it may be. That, of course, is how cults work. And why, no matter the reality, it is so hard for so many cult members to realize that they have been had, that they have been duped, that they have been played for a chump and a sucker. How difficult it is for them to realize that they are now in a cult and they're being lied to and, frankly, abused by their cult leader. That, of course, is what Kamala Harris and the Democrats will now have to overcome if they hope to keep the most dangerous cult leader that America has ever known from winning a second term as president of the United States. No easy feat. So let's take a quick break here, and we will come back with someone who has figured out how to escape the cult of Donald Trump, the MAGA cult, and is helping others now to do the same. I want to talk to him so that we can get an idea of how that project is going and how MAGA World is now reacting to the extraordinary whirlwind of real-world events that they, like all of us, have had to confront over the last several days and weeks. Rich Logis of LeavingMAGA.org joins us next right here on the broadcast for that conversation. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Trump and Butler County's J.D. Vance are the last chance to save our country politically. I'm afraid if we lose this one, it's going to take a civil war to save the country, and it will be saved. It's the greatest experiment in the history of mankind. And if we come down to a civil war, I'm glad we got people like Schmitty and the Bikers for Trump on our side.
He sure is. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. In the hours after Joe Biden announced that he would withdraw from the 2024 presidential race, TPM's Josh Kovensky reports Republicans from Trump on down flailed for a response. Some Republicans expressed anger, while others, visibly baffled by how to react to the shift, reacted by suggesting that the shift from Biden to Vice President Kamala Harris itself was illegitimate, calling the president's withdrawal from the race a, quote, coup. Now, of course, it is nothing less than ironic, much less preposterous, that many in MAGA world are describing a successful president willfully choosing not to run for re-election, freeing up his convention delegates to vote as they wish while offering his endorsement for his party's nomination to his current vice president and running mate in hopes for a peaceful transfer of power, to describe all of that as a coup. As I said, preposterous, ridiculous, particularly since so many of the folks in MAGA world are undoubtedly familiar with an actual attempted coup by their own leader within the last 4 years. But in any event, back to Kovensky here. He writes, Trump's own communications staff seemed caught off guard by the turn of events on Sunday. Jason Miller, who has helped helm Trump's PR apparatus since 2016, announced on NBC on Sunday that he had identified a core Harris vulnerability. Quote, she wants to ban plastic straws. Well, that's disqualifying right there, isn't it? Sean Hannity, the Fox News host and longtime friend of Donald Trump, appeared to take that cue in his Sunday evening broadcast. Hannity reminded his audience that Harris had committed to banning the straws before proclaiming, quote, I love my plastic straws. I hate paper straws. Well, they've really got them now, don't they? He used that as part of a broader effort during his hour to depict Harris as a far-left radical, as hell-bent on banning the plastic straws cherished by all freedom-loving Americans, as she is on joining with Senator Bernie Sanders to enslave Americans in, quote, socialized healthcare. On the non-straw front, Kovensky reports, former White House staffer and top Trump advisor Stephen Miller sputtered to Laura Ingraham Sunday night about the unfairness of it all. He said that having to face off against the new candidate was, quote, as full frontal an attack on American democracy as we have ever seen in the history of America's major political parties. Again, if I could only think of an actual full frontal attack on American democracy any time in American history, much less sometime within, oh, I don't know, the past 4 years. The cacophony of responses from MAGA world wouldn't be complete without at least some forays into attacks that play into stereotypes around Harris's African-American ancestry. Kellyanne Conway, Trump's former campaign manager and longtime Trump communications advisor, plowed that particular frontier by identifying her own non-straw and non-democracy vulnerabilities. Harris, Conway said on Fox News, is, quote, lazy and inarticulate. She does not speak well, Conway said. She does not work hard. Yes, make no mistake, that is exactly where this campaign will be going for many of the folks on the MAGA right, at least as far as my 20 years on this beat would suggest. But let's find out what an actual MAGA guy, at least a former one, who is now trying to help others get out of what he describes as a cult, what they are thinking in the wake of the past several weeks of political whirlwind, from an attempted assassination attempt on their cult leader to his selection of hardline MAGA leader J.D. Vance as his running mate, to the stunning upset of years of political planning by President Biden's decision to not run for re-election, and his subsequent endorsement of the woman who could become the first female, Black, and South Asian president of these United States. Rich Loges has joined us a number of times over the past year or so on this program, though it has been too long, in my opinion, since we last spoke with him. We first met Rich, who voted for Donald Trump in both 2016 and 2020 before seeing the light after massive COVID deaths back in 2021, and coming to the realization that, as he told us in the past, he became essentially a cult member in MAGA world, where he spent his days thinking about MAGA, going to bed with MAGA on his mind, likely dreaming about it before waking up and starting the whole cycle over again the next day, year after year after year. He had been both a MAGA media pundit and podcaster, as well as a script writer for MAGA phone banking, before making the incredibly difficult decision to, yes, leave MAGA. He's now a former member of the Republican Party and founder and executive director of the newly created nonprofit LeavingMAGA.org, established to create a safe, non-judgmental community for those who leave MAGA, as well as for those who are having doubts about or remorse over their devotion to Donald Trump and to MAGA. Rich Loges, welcome back to the broadcast, my friend.
Oh, Brad, thank you so much. It's always great to be here, but it gets better each time. So no pressure on me today here. How's everyone doing at the team?
Oh, well, at this point, don't ask. We're just trying to keep our heads above water. Listen, Rich, I've come to sort of think of you as our MAGA whisperer, given your years as a red hat wearing devotee for so many years, who's actually able to offer some honest insight into a world, frankly, that few of us can even fathom, I think. I want to get an update on how your organization is doing and helping others like you to reclaim a reality-based life, Rich. But I am hoping you can give us some insight today into how MAGA World is likely perceiving this whirlwind of events that we've all been living through in the past 3 weeks or more. First, even though we have learned that the attempted assassin in Butler, Pennsylvania, just over a week ago, was a registered Republican, a gun devotee, was regarded as, quote, definitely conservative by at least one of his classmates. How does MAGA World at this point see what happened to Donald Trump? And are they all generally of a like mind on these things, or is there division within MAGA World on such matters?
Sure. Thank you, Brad. I'm going to answer that in a what if way. If I were in the MAGA community right now, and the way that I would be approaching, along with my fellow MAGA Americans, what I would be considering with this event is it would strengthen an already strong bond between supporters and former President Trump. I know that when I was in MAGA, one of my commonly deployed tactics was to abhorrently dehumanize others. And leaving MAGA and starting the organization, and just the way that I overall try to engage and communicate with those on the political right, including Trump voters, the way, Brad, that I've had to humanize and communicate this to the general public, and I realize that some are going to recoil at this next statement, but most MAGA Americans, and I've got quite a bit of experience with so many of them, deep down, these are not bad people. They are there is a goodness, and I'm not saying all, because we know that any large group doesn't have all good people, but most of them deep down are good people. But what has happened is I allowed it to happen to me, and I always emphasize the allowed, because I need to take responsibility, is that many of the MAGA Americans' normal concerns and anxieties and fears have long been manipulated and exploited by Trump and the Republican Party. And it's not that we can be exploited because we lack intelligence or good moral character, but the assassination attempt, a lot of the rhetoric we're seeing now with Vice President Harris as the likely nominee, what it does is it really embodies that MAGA Americans view Mr. Trump as really the last stand, and that if he's not victorious and MAGA is not victorious, then it will mean that liberal democracy has taken over and all of those in the MAGA community are going to lose their country. And that is what I believed. And I would be thinking exactly the same right now. If I were in MAGA, I would still be thinking that now Vice President Harris poses the existential threat that I believed Hillary Clinton and the Democrats and President Biden posed in 2020. And I think it is admittedly difficult to balance between we need to move on from Mr. Trump. And the way that that will happen is that he and the Republican Party ideally are not just defeated, but historically repudiated. And I want to emphasize something to listeners but no one should preface what I'm about to say as a reason not to vote. But I think that the Republican Party is going to be historically renounced and repudiated in November. I think that the Republican Party knows that. And with leaving MAGA, there are really two goals, a short-term and a longer-term goal. The short-term goal is, as someone who's not a registered Democrat, I'm a registered independent, my message is going to be tailored to undecided voters. And, you know, Brad, there's a lot of approaches and juxtapositions we could present between the two tickets, selflessness and stability versus chaos. One that I'm probably going to hone in on is uniter versus divider. But beyond just uniter, divider in a political partisan talking point, what I'm going to really stress to undecided voters is that Mr. Trump and MAGA have torn asunder millions and millions of relationships and communities and households and places of worship. And whatever disagreements undecided voters may have with the Democrats and Vice President Harris, it's very clear just from an objective observation and analysis that Vice President Harris and the president have not been the kind of divider that Trump and MAGA have been. And I respect that there are those out there who are unsure, the so-called double haters. Our politics are rancorous. The disillusionment is something I relate to because my belief that the two parties were the same was really my entree into MAGA. I felt that we needed someone to take a sledgehammer to the system, obliterate the established political order, and we needed a disruptor. Mr. Trump was a disruptor. It's just that I came to realize that his disruption was anathema and antithetical to democracy and our democratic lowercase d institutions.
And you sort of jumped forward a little bit to some of the questions I wanted to get to and pass some of the other ones, the MAGA world response to J.D. Vance and to Kamala Harris. But it seems like you're suggesting here that in specifically the attempted assassination, that it sort of justified MAGA world's thinking that their guy was, you know, saved by God in order to save them. Is that an appropriate interpretation of how MAGA Americans saw that attack on Donald Trump?
Yes, absolutely. There's a very well-known famous meme of Donald Trump sitting on a chair with his hand in the formation of a gun, and the text reads, It's not me, they're after you. I'm just in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens when fears and anxieties and the loss of one's country and a loss of control is how it's projected upon Mr. Trump. Because when I was in MAGA, we viewed any attack on Trump. It didn't matter if it was a Democrat or a Mitt Romney or a Rhino, Republican in name only. Any attack on Mr. Trump was an attack on us. And I don't really think MAGA cares who the vice presidential selection was. Just like I didn't, none of us really were, we were more or less neutral and indifferent to Vice President Pence when he was selected. And I suspect that that's the case right now with most MAGA Americans and J.D. Vance. They're not there supporting really Trump and Vance. It's really Donald Trump. He is the messenger for them, as he was for me, the person whom we believed was going to save America and save democracy. And an assassination attempt, which when I first heard about it, my very first thought was, I truly hope that he is okay. You know, I hope that he is okay. And I did fear the worst for his family. If it had turned out that he in fact was killed at that event. And as a side note on that, Brad, if I may, yes, the Secret Service looks like they did fail. There was a security breakdown. We're going to find out more about it. But as I've been letting others know, that even an event where the Secret Service had failed to fully secure the area is still a pretty safe event. And yet a civilian with an AR rifle was still able to get shots fired. So the Secret Service, who's in charge of protecting the most powerful individuals in the world who know the most well-kept secrets, even now the Secret Service is struggling with gun-related violence. So what does that really say about that gun epidemic that we face in the United States? And I'm someone, just as an FYI for listeners, I'm someone who owns a firearm. Mm-hmm. It is a unique right for American civilians. It's also unique that we lead the world the way we do in a category we don't want to be in, which is gun-related trauma and injuries and violence. And the assassination attempt, it has just strengthened the already strong bond with Mr. Trump. And that is not a bond that can break for most of them if we do not electorally mercy kill the Republican Party in November. And that's the terminology I use, electorally mercy kill the party. And it's not because I want a one-party system or a one-party country, but one party is functional and the other isn't. And I would like to see a relatively two-party a functional two-party system, even as someone who's a registered independent.
I played at the top of this segment, Rich Lowe, just a clip from Ohio State Senator George Lang. That was from a J.D. Vance rally on Monday in Ohio, telling the crowd that if they didn't win this November, essentially only a civil war could save this country. Rich, I fear that MAGA world has been groomed at this point by Donald Trump, by Fox, by the rest of the right-wing media to actually believe that not only are they going to win this November, but they're going to win in a landslide, and that damn near anything short of, you know, winning all 50 states in a, you know, a Reagan style landslide will somehow be seen as a fraudulent election, no matter the real results. And frankly, no matter who wins, I've noted several times, I'm not sure which outcome I should be more concerned about, Donald Trump winning or Donald Trump losing this November. Am I right to be concerned about how MAGA world has been groomed about the possible outcomes this November? And as that Ohio State Senator suggests, that a civil war will be needed if they do not get the result that they have now been groomed to expect.
Yes, and the grooming has occurred for most within and over the last many, many several years. I'm skeptical that someone in elected office who talks about civil war actually believes that. But I will cite it as evidence to affirm my earlier point, which is that it is used, and it's these politicians who say it have so terribly led astray MAGA Americans and those who are really the devout Trump voters, as I was, that if we have to resort to violence to save America, that it is warranted and it is justified. And for those in MAGA who do believe it, even if we do say that there's a minority of the community who do think it, certainly even a minority is capable of causing and wreaking havoc, as we saw on January 6th. And I do believe that MAGA Americans who think that a civil war or something similar would be necessary to save America, I don't doubt that they sincerely hold that belief. And even with the valid point you mentioned about whether a win or a loss is worse, to use an old phrase here about the lesser of two evils, I'm a little ambivalent to articulate it this way, but for lack of a better way, at least at the moment, I think that MAGA Americans need to be saved from themselves. And I use a whole host of adjectives to describe how I was in MAGA and as I observe with others now, which is that if one is made to feel panicked and desperate and despaired and hopeless, and even at times for me, nihilistic, we have in our minds that we will support anyone or anything. And we can find ways of justifying the possibilities of rejecting legally legally sort accounted for elections where votes are counted and the winners win fair and legally. Mm-hmm. And that is something that the traumatic stolen election rhetoric was one of the early parts that started to get me really angry and upset at Mr. Trump. It was not enough for me to forego my support of MAGA. That the catalyst for that was Ron DeSantis's, when he started to flip on public health measures and the vaccine as kids were getting sick here in Florida back in 2021 with the Delta surge. Mm-hmm. And so I think that right now there is a moment for us where to move on past Trump, the only way as I see it, that we would have a chance of looking to empower people to eventually leave MAGA is that we do need to defeat Mr. Trump, because it's not just the short-term benefit, but it is the long-term one. If Trump were to be victorious in November, I'm admittedly not as confident that people would be willing to leave MAGA over time, because whatever reservations even some of them may have, Brad, there's nothing like winning to alleviate some of those qualms and reservations. And I am committed right now to engaging and messaging that to undecided voters, that while I can appreciate their feelings of disenchantment, democracy ultimately requires that we take a side, and these concerns that most Americans have, which they'll have for the duration of their lives, economic opportunity, children's education, safety and security, and a host of others, we have to determine whether we think that someone such as Mr. Trump, who believes he is above the presidency, is he really the one best suited and the best fit to lead, to try to find solutions to those? Or are we going to look to the ticket that represents unity and stability and selflessness, which is the ticket of Vice President Harris and whomever she chooses? And for those out there who may have disagreements with the Democratic Party, I do as well. But very clearly, this choice could not be more of a stark contrast we have before us.
I know you can't see the future, Rich, and I got to let you go in any event in a minute or so. But you must have some sense of this based on your years deep in that MAGA cult. If Trump loses this election, if he is electorally mercy killed, as you suggest, what comes of MAGA? As you see it, does the movement live beyond him, or does it then finally begin to unravel?
No, unfortunately, it is going to live on. It will endure. It's possible it could take on slightly different branding, which usually the branding may differ, but the product doesn't differ too much from the prior iterations. And there's going to be millions and millions of what I'm going to call MAGA free agents. And I am wagering, Brad, that if Trump is defeated, that more and more Americans in the MAGA community, that they are going to start having doubts, and they're going to start questioning their support. And those are the ones for whom we really founded Leaving MAGA, our organization. For those who have left, we've got testimonials we're going to start presenting to the public, including one, a young man who was 14 years old when he became engrossed in MAGA and to his credit was able to leave. Another lady very, very deep in QAnon MAGA conspiracies and got to a point where there was these lines of demarcation she could not cross. So I do believe there are others who have quietly quit. I think there are others now who are in maybe the nascent stages of doubt and remorse. So yes, MAGA is going to remain in the country. And while that's not good news, there is an opportunity before us. And I think the only way to really create an off-ramp and an exit ramp for those in MAGA is we have to present with them, or to them rather, another community. Because that is the word that I use. I think it's even a more appropriate descriptor than cult. I'm a bit ambivalent usually about saying that. I understand why the public might think it. It was cult-like for me. But if we can provide a new community, free of judgment, free of ostracization, where people can reclaim their individuality, because there is no individuality in MAGA, Brad. It is wholly conformist. Mm-hmm. I don't see another way of looking to invite people out of MAGA and into a new community. And I'm not saying that because it's my idea. If anyone out there has a better idea to empower people to leave MAGA, I will gladly align myself with their efforts. But I think a community is really, it's really the only exit for them. And that's what we've created. And we're going to keep building that.
Well, I think what you're doing at leavingmaga.org, Rich Logis, is courageous and critical. If it probably feels thankless at times, but I think it's really important. I hope we get to talk to you more frequently in the future. I'd love to even, if some of those folks who have come to Leaving MAGA, you mentioned a couple of them there, if they would be interested in joining us on the show along with you or without you, I'd love to talk with them as well, because I agree there needs to be a community, there needs to be an exit ramp offered to these folks to say, hey, it's okay to renounce where you have been and come to the light. And so I just think it's so important what you're doing. Rich, I got to get out. Former member of the Republican Party, former MAGA member, of course, now the founder and executive director of leavingmaga.org. You can also find them on the site still known as Twitter at leavingmaga, I believe is the Twitter handle. Rich Logis, always a delight speaking with you, and I do look forward to doing it again in the near future, my friend.
It's always an honor. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, sir. Okay, let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back. Hey, Des.
Hey.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report and another breaking story that we have been trying to keep up with all day. That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Just a quick thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate. To help Desi Doyen and I stay on your public airwaves. You're the only thing that keeps us on those public airwaves. We don't rely on corporate support or political support. We rely on you, and your support is needed now more than ever. At bradblog.com/donate. Thank you. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Before we get to the GNR, a terrible story that we have been following, frankly, trying to keep up with as the death toll has been quickly growing throughout the day. As AP is reporting at this hour, mudslides triggered by heavy rain in a remote part of Ethiopia have killed at least 229 people now as we go to air, including many who tried to rescue survivors. That, according to local authorities on Tuesday, and what the prime minister there called a, quote, terrible loss. I suspect that number will continue to rise in the next few hours and days. Young children and pregnant women are said to be among the victims in this remote district of southern Ethiopia, according to a local administrator who said that at least five people have been pulled out alive.
Well, that's good news.
The death toll rose sharply from the initial one of just 55 late on Monday. It's not immediately clear how many people were still unaccounted for, but search operations are continuing. Many victims were buried on Monday as rescue workers searched the steep terrain for survivors of another mudslide the previous day. So many rescuers remain missing at this point.
Yeah, they were hit by more than one landslide.
Yeah, they showed up to help people in one landslide, and then they got hit. Landslides are said to be common during Ethiopia's rainy season, which started in July and is expected to last until mid-September. So as these deadly mudslides are said to occur frequently here and in the wider East African region, I don't know if this can be tied to climate change or not at this point.
I think it can. It does occur in an area that experts say is increasingly vulnerable to the effects of climate change, from long droughts that are then followed by strong storms and more frequent intense rainfalls, according to the New York Times. Mm. And also a local administrator told the Ethiopian Broadcasting Corporation that such disasters are now occurring in areas where where they have previously been rare. So, yeah, and yeah. The what makes it even harder is that the area where the landslides hit is impossible to reach with heavy machinery. So that's also adding to the tragedy. But and also in recent years, East Africa, which is where it is, has experienced increasingly extreme weather, according to the United Nations, and a third of countries considered most susceptible to the risks of climate change are located in southern and eastern Africa.
Yikes. Not a happy story. We will keep our eyes on that as we get to, oh, sure, the much happier latest Green News Report.
Another twist in what has already been a historic election cycle.
President Biden withdraws from the 2024 presidential race with a legacy of unprecedented climate action.
As district attorney, to go after polluters, I created one of the first environmental justice units in our nation.
His apparent successor, Kamala Harris, was a climate action warrior. Plus,
we will drill, baby, drill.
At the GOP convention, Republicans replay the golden oldies, highlighting stark contrasts with Democrats over energy and climate.
All of those stark contrasts and many more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And I will end the electric vehicle mandate on day one.
Well, that should be easy. Because there is no electric vehicle mandate. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we have had some pretty big news for a change, and it affects the green world as well, does it not?
Oh, yes, it does. Over the weekend, President Joe Biden announced the historic decision to withdraw from the 2024 presidential race and immediately endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris for the Democratic Party nomination. Biden has been extraordinarily successful in utilizing a razor-thin Democratic majority in the Senate to enact a surprising number of landmark climate laws.
How about an EV mandate? Did he create an EV mandate?
Nope.
Oh.
Biden has also issued major emissions-cutting regulations, re-entered the Paris Climate Agreement that President Trump had abandoned, and wove climate into the fabric of decision-making across the government. Biden also maintained the U.S. lead as the world's largest oil producer, a strategy widely criticized by environmental groups, but which industry analysts say has moderated oil price volatility and inflation. Biden's infrastructure law and CHIPS Act have poured billions into repairing and hardening America's infrastructure against climate impacts and brought manufacturing back to the United States. The biggest of all, however, has been Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, the single largest investment in climate action in the nation's history that has set the U.S. clean energy transition in motion.
Not just in the nation's history, but in global history.
Yes, and if all of Biden's climate laws and provisions are fully enacted, experts say the U.S. would be on track to cut its greenhouse gas emissions up to 40% by 2030. That matters because future U.S. emissions will directly affect how much global warming current and future generations must face.
How much more of this do you guys want to take?
If Vice President Harris secures the Democratic Party's nomination at its convention in August, she brings a strong record on the environment and climate. As San Francisco District Attorney, she formed an environmental justice task force. As California Attorney General, she prosecuted pipeline companies for oil spills, brought lawsuits against fossil fuel polluters, and launched an investigation into oil giant Exxon's decades-long disinformation campaign to deceive the public about fossil fuels' role in causing climate change.
Donald Trump ain't gonna like any of that.
Now, President Biden's climate success is fragile. Throughout their national convention in Milwaukee last week, Republicans and their nominee, former President Donald Trump, promised to dismantle all U.S. climate policy and gut the federal government's ability to address the accelerating impacts of climate change.
Now, that's a great idea.
Despite polls showing a consistent 70% of Americans want the federal government to expand renewable energy and curb fossil fuels, Republicans and Trump instead say they will expand the burning of fossil fuels that drive climate change, repeal the Inflation Reduction Act, re-withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, reverse energy efficiency standards, and gut federal science agencies. In speech after speech at the convention, Republicans lied to the American public about Biden's actual energy policies. For example, as Brad mentioned, there is no electric vehicle mandate. And Trump lied about the nation's growing electric vehicle charging network, falsely claiming that $9 billion was spent to build just 8 chargers. In reality, Biden's infrastructure law allocated $7 billion total for a national electric vehicle charging network. Under the program, hundreds of charging stations are under construction now. A handful have been completed, but states control the pace. Bloomberg News reports that there are already 9,000 public fast charging sites in the United States. Companies will privately invest $6 billion in charging infrastructure in 2024 alone. At the current pace, public fast charging sites will outnumber gas stations in the United States in about 8 years.
So there's not 9 charging stations, as Donald Trump said. There's actually 9,000.
Numbers are hard.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You know that.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Yep. My thanks to our guest today, Rich Logis of LeavingMAGA.org, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com, where there is no paywall, thanks to those of you kind enough to help us stay on your public airwaves by hitting one of those donate buttons or just going straight to bradblog.com/donate. We couldn't do any of this without you. That's right. I blame you. You can drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, you will find me at The Brad Blog. You will find Desi at Green News Report.
We'll see you there. Please come by and say hi.
We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.